we'll be discussing separation from Krishna, which we haven't discussed much because everything has been union with Krishna. We've heard about different residents of Vrindavan being with Krishna, Mother Yasoda with Krishna, the boys with Krishna, the gopis with Krishna. But the gopis, to some degree, even when Krishna is in Vrindavan, they experience separation on a daily basis. But separation is one of the most important and highest expressions of Krishna consciousness, specifically separation for Vrindavan Krishna, and especially by the gopis. So in one sense, that happens when Krishna leaves Vrindavan. You could say it's not Vrindavan pastime, but of course it is, because they're thinking of Krishna when he's away. And thinking of him in the context of those very pastimes that we've been hearing about. So tonight I'll try to lead us up to a group reading that we're going to have of Krishna leaving Vrindavan, when Akura took Krishna out of Vrindavan. And the next chapter that after the Rasa dance is called The Gopis' Feelings of Separation. And in the beginning of this chapter, Prabhupada says some things that are rather startling in their emphasis about the importance of ourselves culturing the same kind of separation from Krishna that the gopis have. Just to give a start, a simple definition of separation will be that the lovers or devotees of Krishna are missing him when he's away. And this missing has the appearance of unhappiness, but actually it's a transcendental bliss of a variety. It's one variety of transcendental bliss. And by actually crying for Krishna or calling for Krishna in separation, he is present in the absolute sense. So the gopis, they weren't satisfied with having Krishna's association at night, and they couldn't be with him in the day because of being girls and his other duties. So they missed him, and this chapter called The Gopis' Feelings of Separation is made up of different things that they say, helping each other to remember Krishna while he's away. Prabhupada says about it, "This strong feeling of separation is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya and his direct disciplic succession of Goswamis. When we are not in physical contact with Krishna, we can associate with him like the gopis through feelings of separation. Devotional service to Krishna in feelings of separation elevates the devotee to the highest perfectional level, to the level of the gopis." He gives the example of the six Goswamis who were in this mood, Lord Chaitanya who was in this mood. And then, to be even more specific in its application for us, he says, "Those who are in the disciplic succession of the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya should also feel the separation of Krishna, worship his transcendental form, and discuss his transcendental teachings. The spiritual masters should enrich the devotees to the highest devotional perfection, feeling constant separation while engaged in the service of the Lord is the perfection of Krishna consciousness." So he's really advocating it here as the duty of spiritual masters and devotees in this line, because this is the line of Radha Krishna worship as taught by Lord Chaitanya. And Radha Krishna worship means feeling separation. That's a very striking passage by Prabhupada. Yes?
When a devotee experiences that he's removed from realization of Krishna, or he feels just such an impact in God realization, is that like a beginning stage of this separation?
Well, it depends how you feel about what you just described. If that if feeling to be a neophyte and feeling to be very distant from Radha Krishna, if that recognition on your part produces a sense of vacancy and yearning to have it, then it's the beginning. Just to be a neophyte in itself is not the beginning. One could be a complacent neophyte or an indifferent neophyte. But if one thinks, oh, I'm such a neophyte, and I'm attracted to hear about Krishna and the gopis, but I cannot take part in this. I cannot chant the holy name. This hope against hope is certainly beginning. Stage. Because we are living in separation from Krishna, so we just have to understand it and understand what we're missing. Yes.
Speaking about this feeling of separation being presented in our mind, and especially within the Bhagavad Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we manifested that in words with the last two verses of this chapter. Now, on the earth plane, as we try to become the bodies, and we get back to the spiritual world, so what you kind of get is that feeling of separation and being higher. Now, how we can understand our relationship with Goloka Vrindavan being eternally with Krishna in the world? Is there always eternity separation, or is this Vipalanga takes the highest stage of religion in the spiritual world?
They go together. These union is made nicer by separation, and separation has meaning because it anticipates union. So it's not that one is exclusively higher than the other, but they're both necessary for rasa. Therefore, if that's true in the manifestation of Goloka in this world, it's true with some adjustments in the spiritual world also. So the gopis, they paint little word portraits of Krishna. Krishna, he looks so nice when he leans on the left, on the hand of his left elbow, and he plays his flute, and the way he strides in his walk when he walks home, and the way his body is built, and they're describing him in different ways to remind each other of him. Prabhupada says, the example of the gopis is very instructive to persons who are trying to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. One can very easily associate with Krishna simply by remembering his transcendental pastimes. So, after that chapter, then the next chapter describes the killing of Aristasura demon. And after that, Narada goes to Mathura and tells Kamsa about the actual identity of Krishna. Prabhupada says Narada's business is to move things along quickly. He knew Krishna was winding up his Vrindavan pastimes. So he tells Kamsa that actually this child is the eighth son of Devaki, the one who was predicted to kill you, and he's killed all your demon friends. So Kamsa then makes his plan to have a big wrestling match. He'll invite Krishna there and kill Krishna. Of course, Narada then goes and informs Krishna of this plan by Kamsa. And Kamsa sends his messenger, Akura, who is actually a devotee of Krishna. And this sets the stage for Krishna's leaving Vrindavan, which is what we're going to have in the reading on tonight. Akura's journey to Vrindavan is wonderful in its own right for reading, meditating on the ideal way to approach Vrindavan. I have a favorite passage the whole meditation by Akura is nice, but when he actually reaches Vrindavan, it's a very visual description. It's not long. I'd like to just read it to you. One purpose in doing this, remembering our favorite sections, is that we can each accumulate favorite sections that seem to really work for us by placing us right in the Vrindavan setting with Krishna there. And the more we have these that we can turn to and remember, it will make it real to us. I like this one because it's so relaxing. It's such a relaxed setting, which is the mood of Vrindavan, not a pompous, majestic description of thrones and everything, but Krishna, they come in the evening around this time, a little earlier, and actually every night you can meditate at this time that Krishna's coming home. Now, Krishna's coming home in general is very wonderful to think of, with the dust from the cows and he's a little tired and all the cows are there and the boys and everyone is waiting to see him. But when Nakula arrived, he had already been home. Krishna was already home. And although he's the son of the king of Braja, he is supervising the milking of the cows. And so Kuru walks right in on their daily life, and we get such an informal darshan of the two great personalities, Krishna and Balaram. Krishna was dressed in yellow garments and Balaram in bluish. Akura saw that Krishna's eyes were like the beautifully grown lotus flower of the autumn season. He saw Krishna and Balaram in the spring of their youth. Both were similar in bodily features. Krishna was blackish in complexion and Balaram was whitish. They had well-constructed bodies, beautiful hands, and pleasing faces, and they were as strong as elephants. After seeing their footprints, Akura actually saw Krishna and Balaram face to face. Although they were the most influential personalities, they were glancing at him with smiling faces. They had just returned from tending cows in the forest. They had taken their baths and were dressed with fresh clothing and garlanded with flowers and necklaces of valuable jewels. Their bodies were smeared with the pulp of sandalwood. Akura greatly appreciated the aroma of flowers and sandalwood and their bodily presence. He considered himself very fortunate to see Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his plenary expansion, Balaram, face to face. And that scene continues like that, and because Akura is like their uncle. It continues in an informal, very affectionate sense of receiving the honored guest, and they give him a place to stay, and food, dinner, and then they go take care of their dinner, then they come back and sit together and chat with him before he takes rest in the evening. So it's all very nice and very pleasant, but actually from the gopi's point of view, Akura's visit is like, he's like death personified because of his mission. So when they're sitting together with Krishna and Balaram, Akura says that Kamsa has this plan to kill you and he wants you to come to Mathura to do this. So they just laugh loudly, Krishna and Balaram, that he thinks he can accomplish this. And they say, yes, we'll go tomorrow to Mathura, we'll pack up everything, and we'll all go in a group and we'll bring gifts for Kamsa and we'll see what we'll do there. So this sets the stage next, for the gopis, who apparently were not even told about this or consulted about it, showing in a social sense their unimportance in the scheme of things, although spiritually they're the most important people, closest to Krishna's heart in Vrindavan. When it's time to make a decision like this, it appears that they were not even told personally by him. I have a few comments I wrote down before we start the reading. This is a pastime displaying Krishna's opulence of renunciation. The full meaning of why Krishna was willing to leave the gopis with such apparent detachment for their love will be discussed when we hear it from Krishna himself in the letter which he sent along with Uddhava to Vrindavan. And Krishna also explained himself to the gopis when they met during a solar eclipse at Kurukshetra. On the one hand, Krishna's leaving Vrindavan seems perfectly understandable and nothing cruel or unusual. By now he was 16 years old, And judging from how the gopis acted, it seemed that Krishna had never left the village before. So did they expect that he would never visit the outside? He had been called on important duty. Whether one considers it that he was ordered by the king, or if one considers his duty as an incarnation of going to kill the tyrant king. Krishna's going had also been predicted by Narada. So Lord Krishna hardly seems to be acting whimsically, or if he just as if he wanted to break the gopis' hearts, or because he wanted to find new girlfriends in Mathura. When we consider these sober reasons for Krishna's leaving Vrindavan, it might seem that it's the gopis who are the ones who are behaving unreasonably. But as we hear the pastime, we become sympathetic to the intense love of the gopis and influenced to share their feeling of accusation against Krishna, who apparently didn't even consult with them before he decided to go. It is not even mentioned that he went and explained anything to them, but simply got on the chariot in the morning and prepared to go. And so it is said that the behavior of great persons is as soft as a rose, and sometimes they're as hard as a thunderbolt. All right, so we can break into the groups now. Barbie. This is going to be a combination live reading, and then in the midst of it we're going to stop for just a few minutes to hear Prabhupada on the tape. I do this so that we can hear his vibration. And when you hear Prabhupada, if I can just prepare you for it, notice how he has a tone of accusation in his voice. On behalf of the gopis, it's very appealing. Again, he doesn't make his voice like a girl, but he seems to be really in the mood of protesting and accusing. If you want to follow, it's chapter 38. You turn to the second page on that chapter. Or what page? Number? Oh, you don't have the Indian edition. Oh yeah, this is 38 is not in the edition. But you each have one copy. Anyway, I don't regard it as that important that you have to read along. It's just for those who want to. But it starts with the paragraph. When the gopis saw that Akura had come to take Krishna and Balaram away to Mathura, they became overwhelmed with anxiety. There's a painting up there too of theirs trying to stop the chariot. So all we need really is to be receptive and remove our identity from that busy person we are who's doing all these different things, and who's maybe tired and who has a lot of homework and exams ahead and behind and travel plans and so many things, so many hurts and likes and dislikes, male, female, whatever we think we are. To just at least relax all that and just be a devotee, simple devotee. And try to emphasize that desire on your part to hear. Or else we wouldn't be here if we didn't have that desire. And this is a very nice pastime. We're going to hear the gopis' voices. I mean voice, the literary voice, or the presence in their spoken words. and their love for Krishna expressed in anger. And by this we can learn so much about love in Krishna consciousness and advance our own cause. And then whatever realizations we get, even if they're small, we can share them with the devotees afterwards. So it just depends on our getting as much as we can, and without trying too hard or being frustrated, I'm sure that we'll be able to hear a a good percentage of it. All right, now you know where to stop to. Okay. Go ahead.
When the gopis saw that Akura had come to take Krishna and Balaram away to Mathura, they became overwhelmed with anxiety. Some of them became so grieved that their faces turned black, and they began to breathe warmly and had palpitations of the heart. They discovered that their hair and dress immediately loosened. Hearing the news that Krishna and Balaram were leaving for Mathura, others who were engaged in household duties stopped working as if they had forgotten everything, like a person who is called forth to die and leave this world at once. Others immediately fainted due to separation from Krishna. Remembering his attractive smile and his talks with them, the gopis became overwhelmed with grief. They all remembered the characteristics of the personality of Godhead, how he moved within the area of Vrindavan, and how with joking words he attracted all their hearts. Thinking of Krishna and of their imminent separation from him, the gopis assembled together with heavy-beating hearts. Completely absorbed in thought of Krishna, tears fell from their eyes. They began to converse as follows. O Providence, you are so cruel. It appears that you do not know how to show mercy to others. By your arrangement, friends contact one another, but without fulfilling their desires, you separate them. This is exactly like children's play that has no meaning. It is very abominable that you arrange to show us beautiful Krishna, whose bluish curling hair beautifies his broad forehead and sharp nose, who is always smiling to minimize all contention in this material world, and then arrange to separate him from us. O Providence, you are so cruel. But most astonishingly, you appear now as Akura, which means not cruel. In the beginning, we appreciated your workmanship in giving us these eyes to see the beautiful face of Krishna, but now, just like a foolish creature, you are trying to take out our eyes so we may not see Krishna here again.
We are cruel. Krishna, Vishwanath Nanda Maharaj, he was very cruel. He wants simply new friends or others. He does not like to keep friendship for a long time with anyone. Otherwise, how it is that we gopis of Vrindavan, having left all our own friends and relatives, we have become the most servants of Krishna, but he is neglecting us and going away. He does not even look upon us, although we are fully surrendered unto him. Now it is the opportunity of all young girls in Mathura that they are expecting Krishna's arrival and enjoy his sweet smiling face. They are now awaiting the auspicious arrival of Krishna there and drink the honey of his smiling face. Although you know Krishna is very steady and strong-minded, still we are certain that as soon as he would see the beautiful faces of the young girls in Mathura, he will forget himself and immediately he would become controlled by them. Certainly, at that time, he would forget us because we are simply real girls and no more he would be kind upon us. He therefore never expect Krishna coming back to Vrindavan, leaving the company of the girls in Mathura.
The gopis then began to condemn the activities of Akura. They stated that he was taking Krishna, who was more dear than the dearest to them, and who was the pleasure of their eyes, who was being taken from their sight without their being informed or solaced by Akura. Akura should not have been so merciless, but should have taken compassion on them. The gopis went on to say, the most astonishing feature is that Krishna, the son of Nanda, without consideration has already seated himself on the chariot. From this, it appears that Krishna is not very intelligent. Yet he may be very intelligent, but he is not very civilized. Not only Krishna, But all the cowherd men are so callous that they are already yoking the bulls and calves for the journey to Mathura. The elderly persons in Vrindavan are also merciless. They do not take our plight into consideration and stop Krishna's journey to Mathura. Even the demigods are very unkind to us. They are not impeding his going to Mathura. The gopis pray to the demigods to create some natural disturbance, such as a hurricane, storm, or heavy rainfall, so that Krishna cannot go to Mathura. They then began to consider, despite our elderly parents and guardians, we shall personally stop Krishna from going to Mathura. We have no other alternative than to take this direct action. Everyone has gone against us to take Krishna away from our sight. Without him, we cannot live for a moment. The gopis thus decided to obstruct the passage through which the chariot of Krishna was supposed to pass. They began to talk among themselves. We have passed a very long night, which seemed only a moment, engaged in the rasa dance with Krishna. We were looking at his sweet smile and were embracing and talking. Now, how shall we live even for a moment if he goes away from us? At the end of the day, in the evening, along with his elder brother Balaram, Krishna would return home with his friends. His face would be smeared with the dust raised by the hooves of the cows, and he would smile and play on his flute and look upon us so kindly. How shall we be able to forget him? How shall we be able to forget Krishna, who is our life and soul? He has already taken away our hearts in so many ways throughout our days and nights, and if he goes away, there is no possibility of our continuing to live. Thinking like this, the gopis became more and more grief-stricken at Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. They did not check their minds, and they began to cry loudly, calling the different names of Krishna. Oh, dear Damodar, dear Madhava.
All right, so let's start your discussions. Which involves much more important affairs. But we who have been hearing Krishna book have come to appreciate that the gopis are the topmost of all the devotees of Krishna. Actually, this feeling gets increased as you don't hear anything else about them. You get into all these wonderful activities in the wrestling arena, and Krishna is very happy in Mathura. He breaks the bow, and all the ladies of Mathura love him, and kills the washerman, and he blesses, very busy, he blesses the garland maker, and he meets Kubja in the street, and he's just doing one thing after another. And there's no mention anymore about the gopis who are crying and trying to block his way. As if indirectly, the Bhagavatam is saying that they weren't so important. That's what he did when he was in the country. Krishna appears to many to please his devotees, we've been told, and the killing of demons is only incidental, and it's not even done by his original form. Just as the gopis are astounded that Krishna first gave them his intimate association in the rasa dance and now seems to cast them aside, we readers become at least surprised that they are dispatched in this way and not listened to. Of course, we cannot criticize the Srimad Bhagavatam. So let us speak some further explanations to show that neither Krishna or the Srimad Bhagavatam is dealing unfairly with the gopis. I'll myself supply one reply to this, and that is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, after that very verse, which always struck me as being too abrupt, a change of attention from the gopis to driving the chariot quickly, the Bhagavatam gives it a purport by Jiva Goswami. He says, at this point, this exact point, Krishna is secretly lamenting his separation from the gopis. These transcendental feelings of the Lord are part of his supreme pleasure potency. So that gave me a lot of relief to know that although the narrator didn't tell us, Krishna wasn't just driving the chariot and forgetting that scene. He was very much feeling it within. More indications to help us understand this? Yes.
As you were talking, I was kind of better understanding about maybe how the gopis felt. It is how they felt. They're left there. Krishna was quickly riding away, and maybe it's helping to evoke that mood in us.
Yes. But we also feel like we feel cheated the way they were cheated. You know? Yeah, it brings out that feeling. Unfair, cheater. Tomorrow night we'll be reading the chapter called Uddhava Returns to Vrindavan, and there'll be more discussion. but I wouldn't want to touch on that so much now. But still, maybe some points to rectify this criticism I seem to be making.
There's one thing that I heard. The Bhagavatam is reciting about the pastimes of the different incarnations and their missions on this planet. So Krishna came with a, you could say, a type of a mission in front of them. And struck me that maybe it's like the sort of like the duty of the Bhagavatam. Because the Bhagavatam is a person to record the mission. And that other part of the pastime where Krishna doesn't really believe, or you know, the experience of the gopis in the separation, that's left perhaps for people like Rupa Goswami and others.
Good. It's confidential. And it's not the duty of the Bhagavatam to minimize the killing of the great, the need to kill the great demon Kamsa, who terrorized and killed so many people and set society right. That is very important, and so Krishna was going on to do that. And your other point, that it's done, but for those who want to know the confidential pastimes of Krishna, Rupa Goswami, and I got a lot, I got more relief when I read the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, because there, this section, which also seems so short somehow, is really expanded on, and you, all your emotions are satisfied to see it given such full treatment. And even before Krishna leaves, he act in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita version, by Sanatana Goswami, he doesn't want to leave, and he goes off with the gopis before he's supposed to leave. And so they go and they have to argue with him that you have to go and kill Kamsa and do your duty. But it makes Krishna seem more human, not human, more reciprocal, the better lover of the gopis. And there's some wonderful, the one detail I really like is where Akrura, he's trying to explain to the gopis also, he's saying, stop this protesting, stop blocking the chariot, Krishna has very important duty. And you should realize, don't you realize the predicament of others? Just consider his mother and father, Vasudeva and Devaki. They've been suffering all this time in separation from Krishna. And the gopis say, Yasoda and Nanda are the only parents of Krishna. We don't inherit any other parents. These are just lies that he has some other parents. We don't even accept. They don't respect any life outside of Vrindavan. But as Raghavir said, we have to understand that there is something else going outside of Vrindavan, and it's the duty of the Bhagavatam to tell this these wonderful activities of Krishna. But it's also, if we want, we can enter the mood of the gopis and not care, and come to think, well, Krishna doesn't have any parents except Nanda and Yasoda, and that's the path, the confidential path of devotional service. But when we preach Bhagavatam, there's no fault in its presentation. And indirectly, all this is coming out anyway. And it will come out more fully when Uddhava is expresses Krishna's real feelings. Krishna, all the time, he's feeling, he's right in tune with the gopis, and equal to them or greater than them, feeling the pain of their separation. You mentioned Rupa Goswami, that's in the Lalita Madhava. Just what Krishna's feeling, even when he's in Mathura and when he's in Dwarka, he'll be embracing Rukmini and saying, oh, the gopis, oh, Radharani, and things like that, and he's feeling very unhappy. Any other comments about this? So anyway, it's not an unfair treatment. But
earlier we were talking about the statement that the spiritual master should enrich the devotee. Mm-hmm. To his highest devotional perfection and constant separation. So the Bhagavatam here is making the point that the separation from Krishna during the daytime is a very important feeling and an enriching feeling. So when Krishna actually apparently leaves and they are separated, then that's a very high point. According to this evidence, this is a very high state of Krishna consciousness. Mm. And although the scene shifts, and it's not emphasized by the description
after Krishna's actually left Vrindavan.
Yeah.
It intensifies the separation.
Yeah, it's very dramatic.
That
separation is really firmly established.
Right. And we'll hear about that tomorrow from when Uddhava goes back and observes what it's like in Vrindavan in separation. The final exams. And if you have it, it doesn't look like a very big stack of. So if you haven't handed it in, please do so as soon as you can. So someone has kindly given us some cake, and if you like, come up and get a piece.